and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 5049, State Scholarship Commission, and we'll turn it over to Steve Bender, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've put together, just in a little bit of background, today you are having the start of 3 days of public hearing on the State Scholarship Commission, and this actually is the last budget, that agency budget, that's assigned to this subcommittee that you haven't had a public hearing on yet. So this will, after you hear this will complete the hearings on the agency budgets that are assigned to the subcommittee. We've put together some materials that we've actually placed inside your budget notebook for the State Scholarship Commission. Usually we don't do this because these materials are not LFO materials in general, but we thought it might be easier to keep track of things if we put them in here. So if you open up at the very front, you'll see 3 items that we've added to what the agency and the governor have prepared in the budget bill, in the budget book. The first is a table that says State Scholarship Commission and has some dollar numbers on it. Then you will see another item, which is a report that looks like this. It is from our LFO analysis of the governor's recommended budget. And behind that, you'll see a third item that LFO has added, which is a spreadsheet to show the calculation of the budget. If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to spend a little time going over the first of those 3 items, which is just this one-page table, because what I would like as a way of introduction is basically to describe what it is the State Scholarship Commission does and how it gets the money to do what it does. And what the State Scholarship Commission role is to serve as an agency to provide assistance, financial assistance to students who are attending primarily the Oregon higher education institutions, community colleges, and private colleges in Oregon. So some of its activities do assist Oregon students who are attending school outside of the state. I think it's best to think of this commission as having 4 primary functions that are in some sense, though they're all related, in some sense these 4 functions are quite independent of each other. And on the front table here, I've labeled those, if you look in the left-hand column, A, B, C, and D. The first function is, which I've labeled A, is the commission is the state agency through which the state supports grant programs to students. If you look at the top there, you can see that under the governor's recommended budget, there is over $32 million in general fund and over $4 million in lottery fund. It's actually over $37 million in total that is applied for grant programs. These are general, and almost all of this money goes directly to students and is not retained by the agency. About 95% of these funds go directly to students. Most of the money goes to students in the form of what is known as the NEED grant. And this is looking below that second shaded bar that says distribution of funds, NEED grant. Almost all of this money that we're talking about goes to what is known as the NEED grant. What the NEED grant is it's a grant that's available to students solely on the basis of need who attend a post-secondary institution here in Oregon. That's to say either an OUS institution, a community college, or a private nonprofit college in Oregon. The way that the grant works is as follows. By statute, the Scholarship Commission has considerable authority to determine how these funds are distributed. The statute itself doesn't really say all that much. So the Scholarship Commission determines, for example, who is eligible to receive these funds and how much money these students will receive. All of this, of course, they can't spend more money than the legislature provides them, but they have the authority to make these decisions. And these are difficult decisions that they struggle with. But the way that the NEED grant is now set up is it's set up so that in order to be eligible, you must have an income if you're a dependent student, that's to say your family is still supporting you and can claim you as a dependent, then if your family income is under 3/4 of what the median income is in the state for a family of your size, you're eligible. If you're an independent student, if your income is less than 50% of the median income for a family of your size, you're eligible.
Excuse me, Steve, so that would be the supplemental grant?
This is the NEED grant in total.
That's NEED grant.
You wrote that again, Steve.
Eligibility is for independent students, income, family income, less than 75% of median. That's for dependent students. For independent students, it's less than 50% of median.
Are most students independent or dependent?
I think most students are, I don't know. We might have to ask the agency. I actually don't know the answer to that, Senator. Approximately 15,000 students per year actually receive NEED grants. There are more awards that are made, but 15,000 students receive the NEED grant each year. The NEED grant is funded until this biennium, or even through the existing biennium. The NEED grant was funded through two sources. It was primarily general fund funded, and there's a small federal supplement that occurred, that is a small amount of federal monies, about $650,000, that are added to the state appropriation and just commingled with that and used to support NEED grant funding. There's a major change in the budgetary environment this biennium for NEED grants. And that is the fact that if you look here at the line that says lottery funds, this is the first time that lottery funds are being made available to support the NEED grant. And this is a major change in what's happened in the past. The reason for this change is that last session, the legislature approved House Bill 3695, which dedicated 25% of all of the earnings from the Education Endowment Fund to NEED grants. And that will provide about $4.26 million this year. Again, the way that this works, this legislation works, is the electorate had approved to create, or have approved the creation of the Education Endowment Fund. The Education Endowment Fund requires that 15% of lottery earnings be placed in a fund that cannot be spent, but that becomes an endowment fund. The voters did not determine, though, exactly how this money would be used. They just dedicated it to public education, to support of public education. Last session, the legislature decided that 1/4 of these earnings would be used to support NEED grants.
So that is 25%?
25% of the endowment earnings. And, like, I know you've come across the situation again where you've had dedicated fund sources. There was no requirement in the legislation that this be an addition to existing support. It could be used also to replace general funds. But the money that's available is dedicated. And what the governor has chosen to do, we'll talk about the governor's budget later, but the governor has chosen to use the funds as an addition to support as opposed to as a replacement of general funds. So the general fund amount in the governor's budget is the current service level for the NEED grant. It's basically a 2.8% increase from the prior biennium. And then the lottery funds are on top of that. And by adding those funds, the total NEED grant support in this budget is about 15% higher than it is for the existing biennium. These lottery funds will grow over time because, again, the endowment will just continue to grow. It won't shrink because it can't be spent, and then the earnings will continue to grow. So this is just the start of something here. In addition to state support for the...
Excuse me, Steve.
Sure.
The lottery funds, education endowment funds, what percentage of the earnings are we using? My question is it some building principal regularly each biennium?
Yes, the principal continues to expand because 15% of all the lottery revenues to the state go into this principal continuously, and then one quarter of the earnings on this corpus is distributed for need grants.
So three-fourths of the earnings go back to build principal, build the endowment.
No, actually, the other three-quarters are used to pay for the interest on lottery bonds for K-12 education.
Really?
Yes.
Is that 150 million?
Well, yes, and prior, yes.
Okay.
In addition to the need grants, there are some smaller grant programs that I list here that are also state supported. There's the Rural Health Services Program, the Oregon Nursing Loan Program, and the Community Service Voucher Program, which I think we'll be hearing more about during the agency presentation. If you look at the need grant, you can see that I divided that into three amounts: a basic need grant that's available to students in all three of the recipient sectors. There's also a separate amount called the Supplemental Grant for Private Students, which is often called SIGSA, which is exclusively to support awards to students at the private institutions and to increase the amount of those awards.
Is that federal?
This is the combined need grant fund, so it's almost exclusively state funds. It's just
so the supplemental grants is state funds?
Right. We take the state funds and a small portion of federal funds and combine them and then distribute them in this manner.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
The second basic function of the State Scholarship Commission, which I've labeled B here, is that they administer private award programs for private donors. That's to say, private donors contract with the commission to have the commission administer their program. The donors set the requirements for, achieving for their particular grant awards. Some of them are based on needs, some of them are based on scholarship, some of them are based on combinations. But this program is not insignificant at all in size. You can see here that this biennium is the projected payments to students in this program are $12.5 million. And all of these are other funds because they're donations, the donations of private donors.
Do we know whether these go to students? Is it about a fair split between state and state and private institutions, or is it overwhelmingly one or the other? What's the breakout?
I actually don't know that. I'll have to look into that for you, or have perhaps someone here from the commission to answer that for you.
Sure. In addition, in that category is the National Guard scholarships listed there, and is that private or public money?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Sorry. I didn't get the question.
The National Guard, I thought, had some payments it gave to students as scholarships. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong on that?
And, oh, that's right.
And is that public or private money? I was wondering if it's in this category.
It's considered in the private awards.
No, it's considered in the private awards.
But it is public money.
It is public money. That's correct.
The third function of the Scholarship Commission is it administers the Loan Guarantee Program, so the Federal Guaranteed Student Loan Program here in Oregon. This actually, even though there are no state monies involved at all, these are all other funds, but this is actually what most of the people in the Scholarship Commission do. I mean, if you look at the employees, most of them are working in the loan program, and we'll talk about that some. Then there is the last function of the Scholarship Commission, which is the Office of Degree Authorization. The Office of Degree Authorization has a number of functions, but they basically enforce regulations, some regulations related to post-secondary education and the offering of degrees and programs in the state. And they have a budget there. They also get some general fund and other funds. The last item there, I haven't listed it as a function of the agency, but this shows the overall administrative expenses that are support the other four primary functions.
I see. Thank you. On the witness list here today on 5049, we have George Bell, David Messereau, Dave Fager, Woody Farber, and Jeff Sweetser. And gentlemen, we'll just let you fight it out for seating positions here. I mentioned Chairman Minnis will be along here in a while. She had some automotive problems on the way down and should be here in just a bit. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's nice to, I must say, look up at the rostrum and see so many friendly and familiar faces. Some old friends, some a little older than others.
Long time.
Your committee staff just did such a thorough job introducing you to the some of the complexities of the responsibilities of the commission.
Excuse me, could I have you identify yourself?
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. My name is George Bell. I'm vice chair of the Oregon State Scholarship Commission, and I'm substituting today for our chair, Diane Sukumaki, who is on professional business in out of state today. And with me is David Messereau, another member of the commission who is a past chair of the commission and will be presenting some remarks to you about the current status of financial aid and trends in that matter. Just let me say, you all have copies of my remarks, so I'll skim through them as quickly as I can. The State Scholarship Commission was created by the legislature in 1959. To save you counting back, that was during the Hatfield administration as governor, so it's been in existence for quite some time. The function itself was in existence before that, but didn't have a permanent home really until the legislature acted to create it in 59. And it was created to administer state funds, federal funds, and privately funded student aid programs for Oregonians attending post-secondary institutions. The composition is seven members of the commission. Two are student members currently attending Oregon institutions, and the other they serve two-year terms, and the other five of us serve four-year terms, and we are confirmed by the Senate after appointment by the governor. Our agency staff comprises 89 professional people, currently headed by our director, Woody Farber, from whom you will hear shortly. The agency is officed in Eugene, with the exception of the Office of Degree Authorization, which is located in the Public Service Building on the Capitol Mall. Our mission was recently revised in a mission statement to more clearly reflect our evolving role in post-secondary education in Oregon. Our mission now is, quote, to assist Oregon students and their families in attaining a post-secondary education and to enhance the value, integrity, and diversity of Oregon's college programs. The role of the Scholarship Commission has changed considerably in the last 10 or 15 years. It used to be that the commission spent a lot of its time meeting students who were delinquent on their repayment of loans or whatever and deciding what to do about it. We do almost none of that now. We're concerned with setting policy and doing what we can to assist students in their aspirations toward a post-secondary education. Our mission supports the Oregon Shines goal number one, as you can see, which is quality jobs for all Oregonians. The objective of that goal is, as it states, that Oregon's workforce will be the best educated and trained in America by the year 2000. My own view is we're going to have to really hurry. and that it will be the equal of any workforce in the world by the year 2010. The benchmark of determining whether how close we're getting to that goal is the number of the percentage of the population that holds a bachelor's degree. Currently, 29% of Oregonians hold a bachelor's degree. Our goal by 2010 is to have 45% of Oregonians holding a bachelor's degree. Some areas in Oregon have exceeded that already. As Senator Crow's hometown of Corvallis has over 50% of its residents holding bachelor's degrees. And the commission, I might say, at its last meeting, just reduced the guarantee fee that students have to provide to zero for the coming academic year, which will amount to a savings of about $1 million for students. I won't mention, I won't go spend any time on the programs because your committee staff just did that. And I'll mention now a few outreach programs that we have. We're not just interested in providing student aid, but we want to inform students about the aid that is available to them. So we made 20 high school presentations last year, our staff, that is. We made 60 presentations during college visitations. We annually put on an Oregon Public Broadcasting broadcast to inform students and their parents about their financial aid options. We have has an estimated 35,000 viewers. Perhaps some of you have seen the program. And we train local community volunteers in a pilot program called Aspire in conjunction with the Oregon Community Foundation in four high schools. Our website has 132,000 hits in the last 12 months. So you see we're a fairly popular organization. Your staff mentioned our new responsibility, the Office of Degree Authorization, which was you transferred to us in during the last session. It's, as he said, is concerned with making sure that quality is maintained in the curriculum offerings to Oregon students, and there is some dispute resolution of capacity in that office as well. If one institution offers a program that may encroach on a similar program offered by another institution, the Office of Degree Authorization reviewed 20 degree requests last year and responded to over 100. Other degree validation inquiries.
Excuse me, Mr. Bell, Representative Winters has a question for you.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative
Winters. George, can you tell me why the office was remained in Salem and not in Eugene with the rest of the organization?
We wrestled with that, Mr. Chair, Representative Winters. It was, I think the decision was made partly because of the holder, the administrator of that office at the time. We thought very strongly about moving it down, but the administrator of the office had been lived here in Salem and had been here a number of years, and on balance, we decided to leave it where it was for the time being. I think at some point it'll be incorporated into the Eugene office. I'd like now to reintroduce my colleague on the commission, David Mesereau, who will talk to you about the trends in financial aid. I think you've already seen it's an extremely complicated business, and even looks a bit like a jungle at times. And there has been some disturbing trends in the last several years in student aid, let's say maybe the last 10 years. Not to the benefit of the student, I must say. And Mr. Mesereau will find that out for you.
Mesereau, if I may stop a moment, Representative Edwards has a question.
This is a question, Mr. Bell, in your overview. You made a point that one of the key benchmarks is to get 45% of Oregonians with a bachelor's degree.
Yes, sir. I use the Oregon Shines benchmark.
When you talk about Oregonians, are you talking about Indigenous Oregonians, or are you, that's always been a tough one because I know people with VAs actually have increased in the state because of the industries that we've attracted. So, is that?
It's my understanding is that the Oregon Shines goal is Oregonians, suggesting bachelor degrees.
Thank you.
Not degrees, just having been earned here.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mithra.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this opportunity to speak this morning. The timelines that we want to talk about have been largely from materials developed by our staff doing research about what has happened in the state. And the seven members of the commission have become very concerned that unless very direct action is taken, the state's economy is bound to suffer. The goals just outlined by Commissioner Bell are not going to be achieved. We've been galvanized into action this session as never before by the material we've reviewed, and we want to use this opportunity to share our perspectives and concerns with you. Serving on the Governor's Task Force on College Access last year brought home to me several critical understandings about what we're doing to the social economic fabric of the state because we have not attended to the sufficient support of students trying to advance their education beyond high school. It's important to keep in mind, I think, that when the NEED grant was first introduced some 20 years ago, it was anticipated that it would assist all of the most financially challenged students in the state with 50% of the cost of a post-secondary education. Clearly, today we're in a very different place than what was intended by this legislation. Currently, on an annual basis, we leave approximately 4,500 students out in the cold. And those that we manage to help, the assistance is 11% of the cost. If you would take your blue book, the tab listed as exhibits, what you do the required reading because there will be a test at the end of this next month. If you'll turn to past the first page that's there in those exhibits.
I'd like to demonstrate this morning the use of some material here to identify the headline that you like.
The challenge is to make sure your hands are free. The chart that you will be examining in the book is slightly different than the one we portrayed here, but we'll catch this up. What we wanted to identify first is the black line that represents the increasing costs over this last decade. They're on a dramatic incline. And you'll notice the green line running along the bottom here represents the kind of aid and support available from the state in form of grants. It tends to be what one might describe as a flat line. To fill that gap between those increasing costs and the amount of money provided by the state in the form of grants, students are borrowing money. And though not as dramatic an incline as the cost, it's clear that this line is rapidly on its way up as well. The consequence of this, as we project this now and in the future, as I think you can find in the testimony of almost what's been interesting as I've gone around the Capitol talking to you about this and meeting many of the people working in the offices here at the legislature, there in almost every office there is somebody paying back a loan or about to take a loan or considering taking a loan and supporting their children in the pursuit of a post-secondary education.
Excuse me, Mr. Mithra, Representative Ross has a question.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to ask about the cost and this projection on students' costs. It would be my understanding that this is a combination of both public and private institutions. And in the last session, we had a tuition freeze, and so the costs in public institutions leveled off, although there was some increase in other fees in addition to the regular instructional tuition. So does this mean that costs, since this line is going right up, does this mean that costs in private institutions are even higher than ever before, and what's the prediction for the next biennium?
But they're going to go on. All of those things are true, and they will continue. But tuition freeze essentially took one part of those increasing costs, but only the tuition fee. There are additional fees that anybody in the state system would have to pay that, if you look at the cost of the total piece that is required if you're going to pursue a post-secondary education, tuition is a portion of that, but not a sole piece. So that freeze represents a small bump in the road at best, but not an overall cap on those increasing costs.
So what does this cost include that you have here?
Well, it's my understanding that all the features from residential of acquiring what it costs to be in the area of the institution, books, the
so
absentee.
Does it include housing?
Housing, yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Excuse me. Good morning. Mr. Nesbro. I also claim Dave as a constituent. Can we ask you to make a slight adjustment? Our view is blocked and we cannot see the materials I want to.
That will be insufficient for the ad grade on the test.
Representative,
the item that is here is the item that's on the second page in your notebook. Under exhibit.
Representative Edwards, I want to make a comment here.
The last tab in the booklet.
Representative Edwards.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on Representative Ross's question about that top line. I guess to better understand that, do you have the breakdown between what the costs are in the public university system? And I assume this is just for in-state Oregonians, I mean the public versus the private. And how many students attend private institutions? I mean, private institutions' tuitions are higher than the highest bar you have here. So I guess I'm trying to figure out how you, this trend line, if you've got this mix. I'm just trying to better understand that.
Okay. Please.
Mr. Chair, I'm Tom Turner from the commission staff, and I developed the numbers on the chart. These are weighted average budgets for actual NEED grant recipients over time. So we looked at the NEED grant recipients, we looked at what schools they attended, which are all in Oregon, some of them state system schools, some of them community colleges, some of them independent colleges, and we multiplied the annual budget at the college, room, board, tuition fees, personal expenses, and books, for each college uniquely, multiplied that by the number of NEED grant recipients that attend that particular college, and then divided by the total number of NEED grant recipients. So the majority of students in the mix attend public institutions, either community colleges or state system institutions, and approximately, I think, 15% of the students or something of that nature attend Oregon independent colleges, but they have costs which are considerably higher. But this is in exact proportion to the attendance of the students at specific institutions. So it is a real weighted average based on where Oregon NEED grant recipients actually attended in each year that is identified on the chart. And it's total cost, room and board, personal expenses, everything in addition to tuition.
Representative Edwards.
And I think that's a good explanation. I would just suggest that the cost, I mean, again, when you look around the state, that the cost of attending the private or public overall is, I mean, I guess my sense is it sort of underestimates overall what it's costing. You're just looking at scholarship recipients versus for the whole public-private system, and that trend line, my guess, is even steeper, but and an even higher number. But the only point I'm trying to raise is that the debt that families are incurring is very large relative to sort of what the scholarship is showing.
Thank you. That helps make the case even more dramatically, I think. That leads us to what we perceive to be the central problem, is that Oregon students are essentially being buried under this enormous pressure to borrow money, and that represents for me the analysis that says this has a strategic and powerful effect on the economy of the state.
It would be my argument that what this does is essentially take people out of the economy. If you're paying off loans of the size that we're talking about here, there's very little else that you're going to be able to buy by way of products or services. But for us, the most telling piece of the information was this also means out of that whatever budgets these people have, they will not be setting aside money for the next generation that goes to school. There's a consequence in this cycle of loans is going to be even larger. There's another group I think that's important to recognize here, and this again came from my service on the task force established by the governor on college access. We looked at a number of studies that talked about people who are loan averse. They are simply going to forego the opportunity to go to school because they cannot understand or haven't had the experience in managing the standard American practice of dealing with credit. They will not only not be in the opportunity of paying back a loan or not paying back a loan, they're simply going to be totally out of the economy by way of the acquisition of the skills necessary to participate in what we're creating here as an information-based, consumer service-driven economy, the one that's replacing the one we're all familiar with that depended on timber, fish, and agriculture. Beyond my 35 years of teaching and counseling high school seniors in the Portland Public Schools, my 6 years of service on the commission have made it apparent how critical these funds are in the lives of individuals and, I think, to the self-interest of the state. More than ever before, I'm now intimately familiar with how fragile and precarious so many lives are as people struggle to manage meager resources while striving to acquire the education and training so desperately needed to stay connected to the sophisticated economy that we're currently developing. This investment by Oregon in full-time, low-income students is a tried and true bridge for thousands of students to make it to this opportunity to be self-sufficient. You know, far more than any other action that the state might take to deal with the costs of post-secondary education, the NEED grant is the most useful tool at striking at that question. You know, in the end, we can't have it both ways. We can't talk about the value of education and at the same time place education out of the reach of the working poor. We cannot talk about the importance of becoming a better citizen and then ask students to carry an enormous debt burden that essentially takes them out of the economy. We can't really speak with a split tongue here. It's not going to be worth our while to be short-sighted and advocate essentially false economy. How well the NEED grant is funded has a direct bearing on the short and long-range interests of Oregon. It was in recognition of this circumstance that the Scholarship Commission asked the governor to provide us with the resources to fund all eligible students and to reach a support level of 25% of the cost of post-secondary education from the next biennium. Now, the 7 members of the commission are not people who spend their time with a head in the sand. We recognize that there's an enormous call on the state's resources for many challenges that Oregon faces. However, we want to stress that this circumstance, if unintended, attended to has extraordinarily damaging, has an extraordinarily damaging capacity to hurt the future of Oregon and all of us sitting in this room. So we ask for your understanding and consideration of an appropriate means for addressing this critical matter. We think it exists in the need grant, and we hope you'll turn your attention and strength to an appropriate solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell.
May I tag just a footnote on that, too? That's something that I made in a statement I made in my remarks about the Oregon Shining goal of trying to have 45% of Oregonians holding a bachelor's degree by the year 2010. And at the same time, we're making it as difficult as possible for Oregonians to achieve that bachelor's degree. It's quite common now for someone to graduate in 4 or 5 years. It used to be 4 years. Now it's closer to 5 or more for one to achieve a bachelor's degree. It's quite common for a student to get his bachelor's degree with a debt of $20,000 or $30,000. And then we expect him to start out in his business life, get married, have children, buy a car, buy a home. Can't do it, carrying debt load like that. Some of us here, I talked about some of us being a little older than others, some of us enjoyed having a GI Bill to get through school. That was a time when the nation really put its money where its aspirations were, and tuition was very low. On $75 a month, I got by just fine getting through school. Now you have to mortgage your future for 2 or 3 decades, maybe, in order to get a simple bachelor's degree, much less a graduate degree. It's a serious, serious matter. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Before we get to questions, Steve, what kind of timetable are we on today?
The Senate has a floor session starting at 10.
Okay, thank you. Senator Nelson.
$9 million that would be spent toward this program at this present point, what do we receive in that amount of investment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, I think each addition enables us to cover those people that we don't cover now who are eligible. So almost every year, some 4,500 students are too late to the table for the money being distributed. Now, of course, we'd have the opportunity to reduce the percent of costs that we cover to reach out and cover those people as well. The choice we made was to run at 11% and try to take care of as many people who are eligible as possible. For each $1 million after that, we reach the circumstance of being able to cover those people who are eligible but currently don't receive any funds. 80% of that number go to the community colleges. And I think you know from your own experience that the way in which people decide about going to the community college, many of them will come late to the table in the decision. They're not on the regular September to June sequence of cycle of school.
Remember, you can put on the $1 million serves 500 people, 1,000 people.
Well, I don't know. About 800? About 900 people a year.
Any further questions? Representative Leonard. I just wonder if you could give me an example of a student who would qualify for a need grant, what the criteria would be for that student to qualify, what kind of money that student would get from the need grant with respect to covering his or her expenses. We have just a typical example.
To the best of my understanding, Representative Leonard, we'll fall into the three segments that were talked about by Steve earlier. In the public sector, it will be just about over $1,000 that they would receive.
For a year.
For a year. At the community college level, it's just under $1,000. And I think for students in the private sector, it's close to 1,500. The critical nature of who's eligible rests in the formula that Mr. Bender articulated earlier. And, of course, with all the people who apply on the forms that are provided, that the information is digested and run through the system. You run this data search for the people who match up, given what they've claimed their status is, as independent or dependent, and what their family income is, and its relationship to those categories of riches. For me, it's very hard to find a profile. The people I'm most familiar with were the young people who went through the program I directed over the last 20 years. These were people who at age 17, 16 and 17, had already become independent of the family that they were connected to. They really didn't see an opportunity to go to college. One of our tasks in our instructional program and in the effort we made at the secondary program I was responsible for was to open up the actual possibility that, of course, you need to go on. The question always came back to how. If you work for Fast Six, for instance, in Portland, delivering tickets for any number of the entertainment and sports activities in that area, the kind of money that you're going to earn in a circumstance like that barely covers a very inexpensive apartment, a diet that would help me keep in trim. I would think, so my wife has advocated I look into it, but that it's not what anybody would want to argue is a healthy circumstance. And these are people who have limited access to health support beyond that. So that the items that were available in the NEED grant, particularly for this group of young people who saw as their major opportunities at community colleges, just at the razor's edge of being able to do it. I don't know if that's a satisfactory response to the question you asked.
Thank you, Senator Gardley.
Thank you very much. A question for both of you. Does the commission support and plan to help the governor raise public awareness about the need for increased revenue to pay for education, pre-K through higher ed?
Chairman and Senator Gordley, my best picture of what education is in the state is from pre-kindergarten through graduate school, and that in that continuum, taking funds or resources from any portion of that continuum to aid and assist another part of that continuum is a false economy. What we have is an educational system whose value needs to be weighed against a far greater spectrum of the state's needs, not against itself. There's seven members of the commission. Five of those are citizens from around the state. Two are student members. I think as I've met and talked with everybody who served on this commission over the last 6 years, are dedicated to the question of raising as much revenue to be directed to education in general as possible, not exclusively for any particular part of that continuum.
I'll just take a footnote on, if I may, Mr. Chair. Once the governor decides what he's requesting in his budget, the commission, of course, as with every other citizen board and commission, is obligated to support that budget. We are here today to support that budget, but if we can't resist explaining the need to you that we see that far exceeds that number.
Thank you. Any further questions for these gentlemen? Representative Edwards.
Thank you. I have a couple of Mr. Mestero, your testimony, I wanted to ask you, you requested the governor funds or resources to fund all eligible students and meet the 25%. I mean, maybe this question was asked, but how much would that cost?
Our best estimate at the time we pulled our budget together was $47.7 million.
Additional or?
Additional.
Additional. Additional. On top of the $37 million.
Second question. As far as this chart you've got, this is Oregonians with loans, is that, or is this?
That's right.
And do you have any sort of, you make a pretty compelling case, in a historical context, is that way out of whack when you look, not in actual dollars is one thing, the next chart, versus, looking back in time about how people have had to take loans. My father took a GI loan, lots of people have taken loans, but I guess you got to look at what their income levels are once they get out. Is that what you're basing it on? And is historically, is this way out of balance, to quote your chart?
And the last GI thing was a grant.
You had to pay it back, did you know?
No.
Okay. Misspoke. Wrong generation for me. All right. But the issue of the loans is that, clearly that's a huge number, but is that way out of balance relative to the past as far as how many people, the amount of debt burden people are carrying?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edwards, my best understanding of this is out of this last 10 years that this dramatic shift has begun to take place. And prior to that time, I know when I went to college in the late 50s, it was still possible, even at a private institution, to spend the summer fishing in Alaska and be able to cover my tuition. There were any number of work opportunities during the summer in which I could almost make sufficient funds to cover my tuition costs, and I went to a fairly expensive private school. Since that time, what has increasingly developed, and we have some additional chart material that I was going to leave for members of the staff to present because they're far more knowledgeable about all the figures that are involved in it, but I suspect it's been in this last decade that this enormous shift has taken place. That's represented by the teeter totter. Now, is it out of whack nationally? I'm not quite sure how I need to address the question in terms of does Oregon look different than the rest of the country, or is this a trend that's going on around the rest of the country, and is this considered to be manageable? I suspect it's not manageable. And I also suspect that the state of Oregon, based on a very limited study I've been aware of our sister states, Washington and California, and the rest of the country, Oregon is out of the mainstream here in that we've allowed that balance to really fall to the loan side, because we haven't attended to increasing grants.
Just to follow up on that, and I'll, is this hurting? That's a huge amount of loans, and if the grants aren't keeping up, obviously we're either limiting access, as you stated, or is this burden falling on the income level greater and greater on the middle class? Who's sharing this load? One would assume middle class is the ones who are basically bearing that. Is that true?
That's my understanding of that. I think the chart that is up there on the easel at this point, is once again is a graphic representation of what's occurring nationwide in terms of that support of education, where one gets the resources. For me, the scariest part of the diagram that's up there is that tiny little pink wedge that
identified here, which are essentially kind of wrong.
There's a growing market to fill a gap that didn't exist before.
Thank you. Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give us some sense as to the age of the students who were applying for the grant, the NEED grant, and also what percentage are families? Because I think there's another piece when we talk about loans, those individuals who have children that, and everybody on this panel knows how concerned I am about the daycare needs that are among our post-secondary students. But give us some sense as to that population group, as to how many of them, if you took a factor, is it 50%, 25%? What are we looking at as far as the age? Because I think that that also has a bearing on this loan issue that we're talking about.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winters, I'm afraid I'm only going to be a person of impressions as opposed to hard data in this circumstance. My best understanding of who goes to school at this point is much older than it was at the time I went. My understanding is the average age in the community colleges is pressing 30 at this point. It would also occur to me that the people most likely to borrow money are people who are, well, here's why I really don't know if they're likely to be older. I know it also takes longer to get through school because, by and large, once again, the population I'm most familiar with has to take time out to go back to work to sort of re-gear their capital foundation to continue their education. So it may take 6 to 8 years to finish up, and that's not necessarily the most productive way to get your education, is to have it interrupted that way.
Thank you. I want to remind the committee that the Senate will need to leave at 9:45 now, just for overall timing.
To tag on to what Commissioner Nezero just said, you know, the orthodox model that many of us were familiar with, a young person would graduate from high school at 17 and start college at 18, and 4 years later, he or she would graduate and go out into the world. That paradigm doesn't apply anymore. That's especially true at the community college level. It may take them several years of working to get enough together to get started, and then it's almost a day-to-day thing whether they can continue in school. If they get married and have children, then they walk out. It's an extremely difficult thing that students are confronted with these days. It seems to me that somehow in Oregon, we, maybe without realizing what we were doing about 10 years ago, I personally attribute it to Measure 5. Prior to that, we as a society placed our money in higher education and kept our costs down. After Measure 5, and we took the burden of helping to pay for higher education. After Measure 5, we passed that burden for the individual student. We say, you get through any way you can. We'll help you borrow. We'll charge you a low rate of interest. But you get through any way you can. It's your problem now.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I think in the interest of time, we have some students who are wanting to testify today, and they're waiting out in the hall. I think we'll bring them in and listen to them, and then we'll get the rest of our panel.
Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Steve, are we coming in? I've pulled the students up to the front of the stand.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
stand down the committee here for just a few moments. State Scholarship Commission, and I understand we have a panel of students to testify, and if you would go ahead and decide among yourselves who will speak and come forward and take the three chairs up front, please.
Not all at once.
Who gets to go first?
Somebody.
Just as a quick introduction, Melissa Watson is a full-time student at the University of Oregon and a representative of the Student Association. I will turn it over to her for the student panel.
Thank you. Just a reminder here that most of us are here until 9:45 today. The Senate moves on into a caucus meeting at that point. I'm Melissa Watson.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Melissa Watson, and I'm the Urban Students Association's Legislative Associate and a student at the University of Oregon. The Urban Students Association is a coalition of student governments at every Oregon University System School, Oregon Health Sciences University, Lane Community College, and now Willamette University.
And for the record, my name is Crane Cooley. I'm the treasurer at Lane Community College. Lane Community College is also a member of the Community College of Oregon Student Association and Commissions. OSA and COSAC have been working together on two issues this session, child care and the Oregon Need Grant.
Our first priority with the State Scholarship Commission's budget is full funding of the Oregon Need Grant so that every student that qualifies may receive a grant. This will be made possible this year by the Education Endowment Fund dollars. It is time for the legislature to do more for the 15,000 Oregon University System students, 13,000 community college students, and 3,000 independent university students who receive an Oregon Need Grant. Additional funds should be allocated to the budget in order to increase the award size of the grant and set the program back towards its original purpose.
In 1971, our state put a priority on opening doors to a post-secondary education for Oregonians. The newly developed State Scholarship Commission administered the chosen program. The Oregon Need Grant was created with the intention of helping both low- and middle-income student Oregonians achieve a post-secondary education. Students could use this grant at a community college, public four-year, or private institution. This program was designed to cover the costs of public tuition and an additional portion of the educational expenses, such as books or supplies. In the mid-70s, the Oregon Need Grant was $500 for community college and public universities. Tuition during this time was only $360 for community colleges and only $429 at the public university. At private institutions, tuitions averaged $2,215. And the Oregon Need Grant was $1,000. Students in the 70s could afford an education and afford graduation without the problem of crushing debt loads that current students face.
The 80s were a time of change for the Oregon Need Grant program and for how students funded their education. Tuition was climbing at Oregon's public universities and public and private institutions. The State Scholarship Commission's budget was not adjusted to this increasing need once students began taking out loans. No longer a flat grant, the Oregon Need Grant award size varied depending on which institution a student attended and other criteria. Community college recipients just barely during this time covered their tuition with an Oregon Need Grant, though prior they had covered their tuition with an additional charge. Public and private universities lost significant ground. Tuition at a public university jumped to over $1,500, but the grant was a mere $765. This amounts to a whopping 62% loss of purchasing power of the Oregon Need Grant. Private students experienced an average loss of buying power of 34%, and community college students lost 35% of the Oregon Need Grant's buying ability.
Well, the purchasing power of the Oregon Need Grant reduced dramatically during the 90s. The passage of several ballot measures changed the landscape of post-secondary education in Oregon. Community college and universities increased their tuition over 90% and cut many academic programs and student services. The State Scholarship Commission was also forced to cut some grant programs. As a result of the state's budget crisis, the Oregon Need Grant and Oregon students suffered. Between 1995 and 1997, over 17,000 low-income students who qualified for an Oregon Need Grant were denied because of lack of funds. The 1997 legislature, as a result of intensive student pressure, addressed part of the problem by allocating $1 million and 25% of the Oregon Education Endowment Fund to the State Scholarship Commission. Now, we are very close after many years to being able to serve all NEED grant eligible students. However, the result of years of stagnant budgets for the State Scholarship Commission and massive tuition increases has not been corrected and has created a new problem.
The current NEED grant eligibility is determined simply by income levels and household size. To receive funding, a student must be enrolled full time, maintain satisfactory academic progress as defined by that institution. The student can use the Oregon NEED grant at any institution, community college, Oregon University Assistance School, or a private university. The award is calculated as the total of 11% of the total educational cost, which includes such things as tuition, living expenses, books and supplies. A NEED grant or NEED grant at a community college is now only $936, at an Oregon University School $1,140, and at a private institution it is $2,738. The Oregon NEED grant no longer covers tuition or even half of tuition. The Oregon NEED grant no longer is awarded to middle-income students as it was in the 70s. Even recipients of the Oregon NEED grant are forced to take out massive loans and are graduating on average with $20,000 in debt. These students work full and part-time jobs to supplement the grant what the grant and loans cannot cover. The Oregon NEED grant was created. When the Oregon NEED grant was created, it was designed to enable more Oregonians to achieve a post-secondary education. Now many students are being frozen out of possible education or forced into astronomical debt loads.
Reducing debt load for Oregon students makes good public policy sense. By increasing the Oregon NEED grant, debt burden will be reduced and enrollment in Oregon's colleges and universities will increase. Studies have shown that for every $100 increase in tuition, enrollment declines by 1 to 2%. Students who are on the fringes of financial survival are forced to drop out or take more loans. College graduates are less likely to be on public assistance, unemployed, and incarcerated. College graduates with enormous debt burden are more likely to put off major asset purchases. Many students who are saddled with debt are forced to take the higher-paying job rather than the rewarding, though less-paying job. It's more difficult in today's times to become a social worker, teacher, or police officer when you graduate with $20,000 in debt. The monthly payments on a student loan of $20,000 averages over $200 a month, which amounts to 11% of a teacher's monthly salary, 17% of a newspaper reporter's salary. It is essential for Oregon's future to do everything possible to make education more affordable, especially for our lowest-income Oregonians. It is time to reinvest in Oregon students. It is time to reverse the years of neglect that is resulting in incredible amounts of debt for our graduates. Now is the time to put the Oregon NEED grant and thousands of low-income students on the right track. We ask for your support of -1 Amendment to increase the grant from 11 to 15% of total education cost. This amendment, with adequate funding, would increase the award size $443 for community college students, $535 for public university students, and $1,062 for private school students. This would reduce the NEED grant recipient student loans significantly. This amendment would change the tide and turn back the Oregon NEED grant to its original intent.
Now, we have a couple of students with us today that would like to tell you what the Oregon NEED grant has done for their lives. And we also have a representative, Vicki Walker, who will be attending. She attended school in Oregon, an Oregon school in the 70s, and graduated with no debt load as a result of the Oregon NEED grant. I would like to bring up Pam Brooks and Patty Williams.
I welcome if you would introduce yourselves individually for the record as you begin to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Patty Williams. I'm a student at Portland Community College, Rock Creek campus. I serve on the Council of Presidents for the district of the schools in the Portland area, and I also am a member of the board of COSAC, the Community Colleges of Oregon Student Association and Commission. I want to start off just by saying thank you for this opportunity to come and tell you my story and how important the Oregon NEED grant has been for me to receive post-secondary education. I was celebrating an anniversary 3 years ago, actually it was 2 years ago, of 3 years of sobriety, and at the time decided that I needed to make a commitment to become a productive member of the community in which I lived. And in order to do that, I realized that I needed to return to school and that I wanted to have the opportunity to go on and help others who might end up in the situations that I had found myself in. I grew up in a broken family. My father was an alcoholic. By the time I was 15, both of my parents had remarried. I have 16 brothers and sisters. Going to college was just not an option for me at that point in time. And very soon after graduation from high school, I found myself married to a man who also had problems with drugs and alcohol. And within 2 years after my divorce, he committed suicide. And the reason, I guess that was my motivation to choose a different path. I realized that's not the path I wanted to go down. And that's what led me to the path to sobriety, that led me to walking in through the doors of the financial aid office at PCC 2 years ago. When I walked into the financial aid office, I didn't even, if I had realized the debt load that I might be, you know, incurring in 2 years, I would have probably not been able to do it. But when I walked in, I was able to hear that I qualified for the Oregon Need Grant. And in doing that, it allowed me into those doors at that point in time. Otherwise, the access would not have been there for me. Since then, I became very involved in student government at PCC. I've been very involved in the community and my own education. I'm graduating with a 3.9. I'm graduating with over $7,000 worth of debt. I was an interim president of Phi Theta Kappa. I'm a graduation speaker at PCC, and I plan to go on to Reed next year. I do plan on making a difference in our community, and I wouldn't be able to do that if it hadn't been for the Oregon Need Grant. And I am graduating with over $7,000 of debt after only 2 years at a community college, and I really don't want to see that happening to our future students and to Oregon. We have really changed the picture of what it looks like to graduate, and we need to reverse the trend. Community college students are now graduating with double the debt load. On the national average in Oregon, double the debt load of students on the national level. We really need to change that, and I would like to see us increase the budget for the State Scholarship Commission so that they can increase the individual award sizes of the Oregon Need Grant. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Congratulations. Representative Walker, I want to just approach you for a moment. You may have to get back to committee, and if you do, we would certainly give you the option to jump in right quickly, or you can defer.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Wilson, but I actually have nothing on my schedule, so I'll wait.
Thank you, Chair Menace, and thank you, committee members, for giving me the opportunity to speak in regards to funding the Oregon Need Grant. My name is Pamela Brooks. I attend Lane Community College. I am also the student body president. I'm the mother of three children. I'm a low-income person. When I began my educational experience at Lane, I came and I only had an eighth-grade education. It was because I was a parent at the age of 16, and it became apparent to me when my child, who was in first grade, would start bringing homework home, and I always knew that I would eventually go back to school to get my education because it was I felt it was very valuable to have, but it became apparent to me that I was stagnant, and he was going to grow and flourish and receive all this education, so I enrolled at the Lane Community College. My first term was at the Transition to Success program, and it was a program for displaced homemakers or also women that have come from abusive relationships, and that was a stepping stone for me. This year, this spring, I will be graduating. I will be transferring to the University of Oregon. And I'm actually very proud of myself. However, I'm also going to be in debt. It's going to be about $15,000 with the cost of living, the books, and the child care alone. I've had to take out loans. And so I'm asking you to support the allocating or funding, putting more funding towards the Oregon Need Grant. Thank you.
Thank you. Another great story. Appreciate that. Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad you brought up child care. The student girl will be smiling because they know that's one of my concerns. But I wanted to ask you, Patty, and thank you for your testimony, because you're going to continue on to read. Have you calculated how much your real debt will be after Reed?
It looks pretty big, but I just got the notice that I received over $20,000 of the grant, which will help to cover a good portion of the tuition.
Congratulations.
All right, Senator Gordon.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would just like to congratulate both of you. You're phenomenal women, and you certainly are creating a wonderful task for yourselves. It's really inspirational to sit here and hear your stories. And as a person who went back to school in the 70s, single parent, PSU, your stories resonate with me, and just want to say more power to you. I also want to express my apologies to the other students in the room and to you. I need to leave for a meeting in the governor's office, but again, I appreciate you very much being here.
Pam, I too really congratulate you on your success. And you're going on to the University of Oregon?
Yes.
And what will be your major?
My major, I'm interested in cultural anthropology. And I also received a scholarship, a $2,600 scholarship for the year. So it's going to help a little bit.
Even with that, you will accumulate more debt during the next 2 years.
Yes.
Do you think you will be able to graduate in two more years, or will you have some things to make up?
I'm on track right now. I should be fine. Yeah, I'll be. It'll probably take me 2 years. My children right now are in first, and they'll be in first and third grade next year. So my child care costs will diminish. Will help.
Mm-hmm. And so, have you calculated how much debt you'll have at the end of the next two years? You've got $15,000 now, if I understand it correctly.
Yeah.
And so you'll have...
I haven't calculated the cost, so I couldn't tell you.
Maybe it's too scary. Maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Congratulations and our best wishes.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Pam, just a follow-up. And not only congratulations, but can you share with us what your child care costs are?
Right now, when my children were enrolled at the child care co-op, it cost me about $500 per term for both of them. So, I attended school during the summertime, and so it cost me about $1,800 per year for child care costs. Right now, currently, my daughter, I pay $200 per month for child care.
And you weren't able to access the limited number of child care slots that we have.
I just actually spoke to a student. She said that she just now received a letter saying that she's eligible. She can receive the child care block grant. However, this will be her last term, so she was on the waiting list for 2 years. So it was very discouraging.
The penalties take note that it takes almost.
It takes a while. Yeah.
On the list.
Yeah. Actually, I wasn't aware of that program at the time. I wasn't. Otherwise, I would have. And then also, it was discouraging because there was a long, long waiting list, and I didn't think I would get the chance to be able to participate with that.
Thank you.
Representative Watt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am delighted to have sat here today. First of all, I'm Vicki Walker, State Representative for House District 41, and it was just a delight to hear the stories. You're looking at a very proud graduate of the University of Oregon in 1978, and I wouldn't have been a graduate from the University of Oregon if it hadn't been for the Oregon Need Grant. I came from a very low-income family My mother was a single divorced mother of four children from a father who didn't pay child support. And in those days, they didn't go after the fathers, the deadbeat fathers, too well. So we were very, very poor. I wanted to break the cycle, but didn't think I could go to college. And I had a wonderful counselor in high school who said, you can do it. You can go to school. There's lots of money. You just need to ask. So I put my pride aside, and I asked, and I went to school for 4 years and came out not owing anything. I went to school on need grants, scholarships, need scholarships, academic scholarships, and federal work-study programs. Without those programs, there's no way I could have ever gone to school. My mother did not have any extra money for me, and it was tight. It was very tight. The gentleman I lived with at the time, who's now been my husband for 24 years, he went back to school also, and we lived on Spam, macaroni and cheese, fried potatoes. It was very limited food budget. Today I understand that college food of choice is ramen, which isn't much better. But it was very tight, and I feel that I have contributed back to the community in many ways. I'm a productive citizen. I have a professional job and pay taxes, and now I'm serving in the legislature hoping that we can bring more money to this valuable program. I have both of my children in college now, one at the U of O and one at Lane Community College, and we are considered middle income, so we are not eligible for the low-income need grant. And my children will graduate with significant debt. But I'm okay with that. There's just not enough money to go around to all of us. And, you know, it's time for me to pay back into the community what I got to go to college. But it made a difference in my life. I can't tell you what a difference it made. I thought I was a smart person, and I wanted to go to school and be somebody, and I got that opportunity. And this program certainly helped. And I see, you know, it was created in 1971, so I was able to access that program in 74. I really urge you to up the amount of money going to this program. It's just phenomenal what it helps kids and young mothers do. It really helps people break the cycle of poverty and be productive people in society. It's just wonderful. I can't say enough.
Thank you, Representative Walker. Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank Representative Walker for coming in and testifying. We share a committee together, and we sit pretty close together, and unfortunately, or fortunately, we even pitched it back and forth now and then, and I've enjoyed getting to know Representative Walker, and her story is very inspiring, and so I thank her for coming in, and I thank her other two people at the testifying table also.
Thank you, Senator Nelson.
I just need to, inject a little dose of realism in here. I really do appreciate the stories. I understand that things are going on, but in this building, what we have just a finite amount of money involved. We have fierce competition for all these. I was in a committee yesterday with, they want a pilot program in two counties and won $3 million. I voted no against that because I feel like there's programs that are far more important to do that. But the fact is that we're only as good as the economy. So everything's related when we talk about things. When we talk, some of the comments from the previous speakers were talking about Major 5 and we're talking about the 1970s. Our economy has lost one of the huge segments, that's from our natural resource industry, our timber. A lot of that money went to education, went to roads, went to families, went to community. So what I'm trying to, you're educating us, and what I'm trying to do in return is to educate you as to what my feelings are on this. Now we're talking about breaching dams on the Columbia River to save salmon. If it comes down to a choice, I'm going to choose children over salmon because I think that's going to hurt our economy if we take those dams on. And they say that money doesn't grow on trees, but in Oregon, money does grow on trees. And we have policies that are dictated to us by federal agencies or maybe some folks in our own government who basically have hurt our education system, they've hurt our road systems, they've hurt our communities. Because we have this concept of how our environment should be. And I have children about your age, or probably close to, we had deep discussions about this because he's an organic farmer and he likes that particular part of that. But the realistic clinics is we have to have that type of income, we have to have that type of industry. And can you imagine where we'd be at this point in our state? We wouldn't be here probably if we were able to go into our federal forest and use maybe not as much as we did before, to use at least some of that dedicated to education, dedicated for our communities, which we hunt. So not only Measure 5, the voters, there's also some of our policies and how we're dealing with our economy, because we are only as good as our economy, and we're only going to fund our public services as good as our economy is. So we rely on income tax. And I don't think we're going to change our taxing base.
Thank you. Well, thanks very much for your testimony. I understand we have a couple more students to hear from. We'd like to have them come forward. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do have two more students, and they're in the same line of type frame, so I'd like to introduce them with no further ado. Amy Shellerman is a student at Western Oregon University, and Rhonda Mullen is a student at Southern Oregon University. She grew up from Ashland today.
Thank you. Good to have you both here, and just a reminder before you deliver your testimony, if you'd give your name for the record, please.
Good morning. My name is Amy Shellerman. I'm a student at Western Oregon University. I'm also the single mother of a two-year-old. When I graduated from high school in 1996, I was in a serious relationship with a young man that had been going on for over a year. And during that summer, I discovered that I was pregnant. And in August, I had already made plans and registered at Western. And upon realizing that I was pregnant, I decided to go to community college for 2 years before transferring down to help save money. My family was very supportive of my decision to keep my child and also to continue my education. I knew that without an education, I would not be able to provide a healthy, stable life for my son. And so I went to community college for 2 years. I was able to go to community college debt-free because of grants, because I was a low-income single mother. And also, I was receiving scholarships. I graduated from high school with a 3.97 GPA. I was valedictorian of my class, and so I had scholarships that I was able to use at the community college. I also worked 24 hours a week on top of going to school and being a single mother. And all of my child care costs came out of my pocket. When I called about the child care block grant to find out what assistance was available, I was told the waiting list was 3 to 5 years, not to put my name on the list. So, needless to say, I'm not on the waiting list for the child care block grant. And so the only help that I get is through scholarships and grants. And now, since transferring to Western in September, I have accrued $7,000 in debt for 1 year at a university because of my child care costs, my rent costs, and my tuition and books. I received the Oregon Need Grant. I received the maximum amount for a student at Western, which is $380 a term. That covers 1 month of child care. My rent is $525 a month. As a student parent, it's discouraging to see that Oregon is not taking a more active and has not in the past taken a more active role in the education of low-income families. The only way that we can stop the cycle of welfare and of poverty is to start making education accessible to us. And I realize that funds are limited. That's a very big issue. I understand that. But the only way we can change anything is to start somewhere, and I think that this is a wonderful place to start. It would make education more accessible to students, and once students start going to school and becoming educated, they're earning higher wages, and the economy gets boosted. And I know that it's not just that simple, but something needs to happen, and that's about it. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you.
Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is John DeMullen.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak to you on House Bill 5049. I am a senior majoring in psychology at Southern Oregon University. I am a recipient of the Oregon Need Grant. However, it does not pay for my tuition, let alone room, board, or books. This forces me to take out quite expensive loans if I put myself through school. I will graduate this year, $25,000 in debt. Due to my high debt burden, I'm very concerned about my future. I'm having to postpone a lot of my future goals, such as purchasing an automobile. I don't have a car. I walk everywhere I go, which in Ashland, that's kind of easy, but depending on where I find a job. Plus, I'm also having to put off going to graduate school, which is an extreme issue in the field of psychology. You have to have your master's in psychology to go on as a counselor. So there's been some tough choices for me to make there. I asked you to look at the attachments I have to my testimony. As studies have shown, a student without a debt burden is able to acquire assets at a much quicker rate than a student with an average debt burden of $20,000. I would represent the black boxes. In fact, I will go in more debt because I will be forced to take a job immediately after college and graduation so I can pay off my loans. Chair and members of the committee, I ask that you reinvest in the Oregon Need Grant and put this program back on track. I ask that you invest the $13.1 million to get the program back on track. I know that's an extensive amount of money, but I feel that I'm a representative of a person that it could benefit, and I represent several students at Southern Oregon University in the same situation. And Sharon, members of the committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to you today.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate your drive up from Southern Oregon, too.
No problem.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this concludes our presentation of our panel. The core, as you can see, there's definitely a trend that's going through the testimonies. We definitely feel that it is time to reinvest in the State Scholarship Commission's budget, and we thank you for your opportunity to give you our case today, and thank the State Scholarship Commission for reworking their schedule to allow us to keep us back to Tuesday.
Thank you. Let me just ask any comments, questions for this group before they go.
Well, I'd say again, Mr. Chair, thank you to them. They make a very good presentation, and they point out a need that's pretty obvious.
All right, thanks very much. All right, I think what we'll do, we've got another couple of minutes. Why don't we go ahead and take advantage of the next 10 minutes or so here, and let's get back to Dave. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'm Dave Fazer from AFS Budget Management. I would like to review very quickly with you the development of the government recommended budget for the Oregon State Scholarship Commission. And in view of the limited time, I'll try to be as brief as possible and open up the questions later. You're familiar with the presentation format from the Budget and Management Division. It is this handout entitled Oregon State Scholarship Commission, Governor's Recommended Budget. The Governor's recommended budget, the Governor's revised budget, is a 38.8% increase over the 1997-99 legislatively approved budget. These increases are primarily the result of FELP and NEED grant program expenditures. $25.1 million increase in FELP program expenditures. $9 million increase in other program expenditures, $4.4 million of lottery funds in the NEED grant program, and there is, on top of that, some minimal 2.8% inflation factored in. Starting on the back page of the handout, we start with the 1997-99 legislatively adopted budget. I won't go through the detail, but suffice it to say, in total funds, we started at $103.9 million. emergency board actions totaled $355,000in total funds over the course of this biennium. Base budget adjustments, approximately $500,000. Essential packages totaled $34.6 million. This included most of the major changes that I had just mentioned. There is a new proposed program in the governor's recommended budget, the Certificate of Initial Mastery Achievement Loan Program, that is represented in House Bill 2251. Cover very quickly an overview of the policy packages in the governor's recommended budget. Package 101 for a public information position. Package plus many of the other packages that were approved in the governor's recommended budget as proposed by the Scholarship Commission are intended to increase outreach, ability to pass information to the public about their programs, the availability of, both from within the Scholarship Commission organization itself and also out with the customers and with the lenders. Package 102, public outreach. This is specifically designed to provide additional resources for the FELP program. That is two positions. Package 202 is a community service carryover funding request. There is some minimal funding available from this biennium, anticipated to be available next biennium, and this allows a limitation to spend out those remaining funds. Package 204 is related to a reorganization proposed by the State Scholarship Commission for them to better staff their mission requirements. It changes the mix of resources and does request one position additional to help with their administration. Package 205 includes a request for an additional position for a volunteer student advisory program, which will be dealt with in detail later. Package 206, an employee-dependent scholarship program request. This is included as part of House Bill 2250. It does include a proposal for a tax income tax credit for employers to establish scholarship programs with the commission. This limitation allows the expenditure of those funds anticipated under that program. Package 207, as was explained so concisely by LFO earlier, does represent new money from a visionary program providing revenue from the Education Endowment Fund interest. 25% of that interest goes to the Scholarship Commission to be used for e-grant. Package 301, Default Loan Reduction Initiative, does provide additional resources for follow-up of student loan defaults. Package 150, much-needed Information Service Division Improvement, $78,000 there in other funds. And finally, Package 090 for the Office of Degree Authorization. Since the Office of Degree Authorization was transferred to the State Scholarship Commission, they have been intently looking at the mission and integration of that office within the State Scholarship Commission structure, and we've been looking at budgetary requirements and resourcing for that office. Package 090 attempts to balance the program requirements with the revenue sources in that office. Previous to this time, the general funds in that office were paying for 100% of the personal services. The personal services in that office are split between other funds and general fund requirements. This package balances out the expenditure of dollars in personal services related to what they do to the specific revenue sources in the office.
Sure. Thank you. Senator Gordley first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our package 101 and 205 related, are part of the same office and function?
run as the public information coordinator position at $100,000 other funds. Is that just paying for the position, or is that, or are there some other costs that are also being paid for that $100,000?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, believe primarily that pays for a position for that package.
And then package 205, is that part of the same office and function? Is there a supervisory relationship?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I'll allow the Scholarship Commission to address the organizational question. However, package 101 is in the administrative unit, and the package 205 is in the grant division. Mr. Farber, did you want to address the organizational?
For the record, my name is Woody Farber, and the answer to Representative Wilson and Representative Senator Gordley. The answer to your question is that there are not a supervisory relationship between those two positions. One is to more effectively administer the private awards program on the NEED grant side, and the other is an information position, as David has pointed out, in the administrative area.
If I may inquire further, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bell, in his testimony, described outreach activities. Are those outreach activities carried out through the public information coordinator position and through the volunteer student advisory program? Is that the intent?
Chair Wilson, Senator Gordley. The outreach activities are carried out by both of those activities aimed at different constituencies. The volunteer activity is one where the staff will be working to develop volunteers throughout the state in the various high schools, whereas the information position is one where we will be actually developing and reaching out to all constituencies, be they schools, be they potential grant recipients, potential borrowers.
And then one last question. And so the $97,408 that we see in other funds for the volunteer student position, that's just for the position. That doesn't cover any other costs to carry out the program. Is that accurate?
Representative Wilson, Senator Gordley, that is just for the position. That is correct.
Thank you. Several of you are in the queue to ask questions here, and I would be happy if you would to go ahead and end our business today and begin with this testimony tomorrow. I know the Senate has to run here in a few moments. Is that acceptable? All right. Thank you very much. Go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 5049, and with no further business, return.